From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You picked a great night to tune in. We have lots to talk about, lots of great stories, and it's going to be a barn burner, whatever that means. The book No Room for Doubt is a compelling account of a real-life homicide and its aftermath. Angela Dove writes about her stepmother's brutal murder in March of 1988, meticulously recreating the course of the investigation and its chilling effect on those whose lives were tainted by this crime. Go to the show notes, click on the link that we have there. We have Angela Dove and Jackie McDonald. Jackie McDonald's, I love the comment. It says, I'm not a hero. I'm just a mother whose daughter was murdered, and nobody was going to kill my kid and get away with that. Jackie McDonald is a TV radio host and winner of the 2007 National Crime Victim Service Award, and it's great to have you both here with me. Welcome, ladies. I had to put my Homer Simpson glasses on to read this because I'm getting older, and the small print just does not turn out like it used to be for me. Listen, let's start with you, Jackie, if you don't mind the comment. I'm no hero. I'm just a mother whose daughter was murdered, and no one was going to kill my kid and get away with it. That's quite poignant.
Well, actually, that's how I felt. If I could backtrack,
sure.
When we came home for Debbie's funeral, because we were living in Minnesota, because my husband was flying for Northwest, and when we came home, my practitioner, and I was her nurse, said to me during the lunch break, you know, Jackie, dreadful as it sounds, you have two choices. You can live or you can die, which meant I could sit on a couch and suck my thumb and lock the world out, or I could search for her killer. And a week after we got home, we got back to Minnesota from California, I started calling the television shows.
Good for you. And that's what my show is all about. We're trying to do what we can for victims and families of victims. Continuing on here, it says on March 25th, 1988, 32-year-old Debbie Whitlock was brutally murdered in Modesto, California. There was no sign of struggle, no evidence of a break-in, and Debbie's 3-year-old daughter slept through the horrific attack. Debbie's mother, Jackie McDonald, was desperate for answers, but detectives were at a loss. I'm going to throw it over to you now, Angela. Take it from there.
Suspicion quickly fell onto my father. I didn't realize that at the time. Jackie had contacted me about writing her story as sort of a way to reach out in the same way that she reaches out to victims and survivors through her television and radio show, just to kind of say, you know, if I can do this, you can too. And I was so on board with that, just really wanted to provide Jackie's story as a blueprint for other families that needed their answers. So as an adult now, I needed to get informed about a homicide investigation that I had really been sheltered from. I had been the last person to see Debbie alive the night that she was killed. I was a senior in high school and was on my way across country for spring break and got the call out there that she had been killed. But I really, you know, my dad and my mother, though they were divorced at the time, really worked in tandem to try to keep me sheltered, and I appreciated that so much. But now I needed to get educated, and what I discovered was that investigators had a lot of reasons to suspect my father. That was heartbreaking, but it also helped me understand his death in 2001, and, you know, I really see that as one of the reverberations of murder that I allude to in the title.
It's got to be tough writing about your family, Angela. And Jackie, I'm going to turn this over to you now. You know, we do these programs and we talk, and you know that when I'm not doing this program, I'm in law enforcement. And we see the negatives and we try to do what we can help you know, do what we can to help. And I do this program both on television and the radio and try to bring strength and to bring a voice to those that can't be heard sometimes. But when it affects your own, like you say, you have two options. You can sit back and suck your thumb, or you can actually get at that. I'm curious your comments.
Oh, well, actually, there are law enforcement in my family, too. And so at that time, he's now retired, but my surviving daughter was married to a deputy sheriff, and he's the one that had to go and tell his wife that her sister had been murdered because nobody informed us, and it was on the radio, and a girlfriend called Cliff to let him know that Debbie had been murdered and to go and tell Karen, which he did. They had to pull him off the street to go and tell her. Because we're in Merced, and Debbie was murdered in Modesto.
Right.
So there were two different departments.
When it affects your own, and I hate to repeat myself, but this is the part that I find so compelling about your story, and I'm so thrilled to have you both on tonight to talk about it. But when your own family is involved, and you have to tell the story of your own family, and I see it time and time again. I think of Beth Holloway Twitty and Natalie as a good example about how the inner strength comes out. Angela, you were a kid at the time when this happened, but now you're able to, and you're not just, this isn't your first kick at the cat, whatever that means when it comes to writing. You usually write humor. But that's what I think is very interesting. How do you go from humor to true crime and talk about your family?
Part of that I really can't take credit for. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I mean, I knew I would have to tell Jackie's story, and I would be telling my stepmother's about my stepmother's murder and the homicide investigation surrounding that, but I had no intention of putting myself in this book, of putting my father's story in this book, until I talked to somebody while I was doing the research. And this was I would never name names, but this was somebody who is very tied into the legal community in Modesto, California, where the murder occurred. And he recalled all kinds of things about this case, just started listing them off. And then he said, the police always knew the husband had done it. Mm-hmm. It just took them a while to arrest him. Well, my father was never arrested, was not incarcerated, and in fact had died 6 years beforehand. So I had to wonder what it was about this case that made somebody in the know believe a truth that wasn't actually true. And at that point, it became not just about Jackie, but clearing my father's name.
That's the part that's fascinating. Of course, we're not going to give it all away, but I'm going to tell the folks, the book is called No Room for Doubt. Angela Dove is the author, and Jackie McDonald is... she plays the role of Batman in this. No, she plays the role of the Crusader, and that was a pathetic attempt at humor for me to go to Jackie and say, now that when you were sitting back or when you were getting involved in the investigation and watching things, and I've interviewed victims' families after victims' families, DAs, defense lawyers, whatever. They always seem to be so frustrated because they're not getting the answers as quick as they want them. How difficult was that for you in this case?
Well, maybe partly because we have law enforcement in my family, I understood a little more than the average person would. But of course you get frustrated because, as you know, the cops don't tell you anything, and I say cops with due respect. But I had sort of a secret weapon. We had a young man that became involved with me about my case, and he is now our congressman, Dennis Cardoza, and I like to talk about him because he did so much for me. He opened doors. He allowed me to use his names, and it opened doors for me that I could only dream of locally. But what I started to do when we got back home to Minnesota, I started calling the television stations, and actually I called America's Most Wanted for about 4 years, hired a psychic, and that's how I got on. Mm-hmm. Unsolved Mysteries took longer, And then one day I was watching just the average person having a little show on the local Comcast channel, and I thought, I can do that. I mean, my mother was an actress in Great Britain. I'm from a theatrical background, so why couldn't I do it? And besides, you know, I have no pride. If I looked like an idiot, I didn't care, as long as my daughter's case was advertised.
Absolutely.
And in 1994, that's, I'm sorry, 96, that's when we started a half-hour program called The Victim's Voice for victims of violent crime.
And it's...
And I was very lucky, because we come from a small town, I was able to get on Merced's KYOS, and I have a radio program every week, which the sheriff comes on every month, or he sends his public information officer. So, you know, I've had loads of help. And I'd like to say that I could have had the book written before, but Angela was my choice because she loved my daughter, and she knew my daughter, and I never once suspected her father. I always knew he was innocent, and I was his biggest supporter.
Angela, when I see the notes about the book, again, for those of you just tuning in, the book is No Room for Doubt. It says the book unveils the intriguing homicide investigation at the heart of the story. The amazing efforts of law enforcement officers and their personal struggles is what I want to ask you about with the case. They say haunted us like no other. Let's get into that a little bit.
I would love to talk a little bit about that, because what I didn't necessarily expect, that could be the theme of this evening, what I didn't expect once I started interviewing first responders and people who had worked the crime scene that morning is how profoundly affected they were by the scene, the fact that my sister, my three-year-old sister, was found on scene asleep, unharmed, just a few feet away from her mother. That whole scene has continued to affect those people's lives in profound and moving ways. And I think that that's a side of law enforcement that people don't often get to see, particularly families that are dealing with cold cases. I want to be very clear that detectives had good reason to suspect my father, and that if I had been in their position, I would have suspected him as well. But these are all people who cared about this case very deeply, and they trusted me with their stories, and I wanted to make sure that I honored that trust. So I've included some of those stories in No Room for Doubt as well.
Jackie, you talked about contacting America's Most Wanted, Unsolved Mysteries, and others. Let's get into that a little bit broader. You do your Victim's Voice program. I do mine, and there are others out there. But sadly, in today's media, especially the cable and mainstream media, there aren't many programs like ours that focus on different cases all the time. Some will grab a case and run with it for 97 shows and nonstop nonsense, where there are others that are just crying for that time, that publicity, I guess you could say, to get that word out. How important is it, and how important was it in this case to get the word out through the media?
About Debbie's case?
Right.
Well, it was very important, because in my mind I thought, if her killer hears my voice and sees my face enough times, he's going to get really fed up, and someone that knew who killed her, they're going to get so fed up, they're going to come forward. And actually, the man that finally came forward on the stand said, her eyes followed me everywhere, mm-hmm. and I knew I had done my job. But, you know, you have to keep it out there. And the one thing I know how to get publicity cheaply, expensively. I mean, I'm very good at publicity. I became very good. I used to say to my husband, you know, if we were rich, I'd hire, you know, one of those people that does publicity. And then I thought, well, this is what I'm doing for nothing. And I did have help getting a television program. And now we've been on, we're starting our 14th year. And we're starting our 11th year of radio. Wow. And no, we do not get paid for doing this service, nor would we want to get paid.
No, yeah, I know that feeling. I know that feeling.
You know, sometimes you think, oh, Lord, I wish somebody would give me a suit to wear on television, because I don't wear them anywhere else. But you do it because you want to help, and
yep.
you feel that if you help another victim, they will help another victim. I mean, nobody's doing it for self-gratification. We need to help each other.
Absolutely.
And I just met a wonderful woman through email, and I can say her name, Cherry Simpson,
yes.
who has given me phone numbers and helped me. And this lady doesn't really know me. She just read the book.
Yep. And Cherry Simpson, yeah, Cherry Simpson is a dear friend, and whose family has also gone through tragedy and
through hell, yes. And you normally find people like, you know, myself and Cherry that become advocates, have had something awful happen in their life too, and so you just normally want to help somebody else through it. I belong to an organization. Am I allowed to say their name?
Absolutely.
To help people.
Sure.
They're Citizens Against Homicide. It's run, actually, one of the co-founders died the other year, Jane Alexander, and her story was on Hallmark, and mm-hmm. her story is also a book, Citizen Jane,
yep.
and Jan Miller's the president. But they have a monthly flyer, and you can put your stories in there. If you're coming up for parole, your killer's coming up for parole, they'll publish it. And, I mean, they're wonderful. Can I give a phone number?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
It's in California.
Sure.
It's 209-728-2873. And there again, it's nonprofit. And they do it because they're victims also.
Absolutely. And this show is broadcast across the world. We have a lot of listeners in California. And it's an important cause. Angela, guilt, innocence, big parts of the book. And up for parole is a big part of this story, too. Again, let's not let it all out, because we want people to go out and buy the book because it's fascinating. But let's talk about the guilt, the innocence, and now the parole issue.
Wow, I'm not really sure where you want me to jump in there. Jackie was phenomenal at meeting her goal of finding Debbie's killer, but certainly her work is not done yet. And at this point, we're sort of working together to try to change some laws in California. Right now, it is not a crime to violate a murdered body unless the perpetrator, is somehow works with the deceased, like in a mortuary or something. And this is really just an odd sort of loophole that nobody has cinched up yet. And it seems like such a no-brainer, but as anybody out there who's tried to pass a law or get a law amended can tell you, it's quite a battle of a different sort, although I have no doubt at all that Jackie can pull it off. She is, you were right when you said something about a superhero. She'll never admit to it, but she should definitely have a cape at this point.
Yep, I said Batman. I should have said Batgirl instead of Batman, and I apologize for that. Listen, the book is called No Room for Doubt. You can get it at Amazon Penguin. The author, Angela Dove. The crusader is Jackie McDonald. She has her own television and radio show, The Victim's Voice. Make sure to click on the link on the show notes. It's a fascinating book. Compelling account of a real-life homicide and its aftermath. I'm told by those who are big fans of it, including myself, that it's one that you can't put down, spellbinding, whatever that means. I just think it's damn good. Thank you, ladies.
Thanks so much for having us.
We'll talk again soon.
Thanks.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No Room for Doubt is the book. The author is Angela Dove. Stay tuned. This is the Dana Pretzer Show, and I'll tell you, we have a story and a half coming up. Do you remember John Mark Carr? I do. I can remember talking to him on the telephone for 15, 20 minutes and, 27 and a half years of law enforcement and doing this program for 11 and a half years, and I've never been so creeped out by a character, and I've talked to murderers and kidnappers and you name it. This guy is something else. I'm Dana Pretzer. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about John Mark Carr and his latest victim here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. I hope you're sitting down for this next story. Like I said in the end of the last segment, you know, 27 and a half years of policing, 11 and a half years of doing this program, I've interviewed everybody and everything. People accused of murder, people being tried for murder, people convicted of murder. But one of the strangest people that I ever talked to, I didn't interview him, but I talked to him on the phone for about 15, 20 minutes, and I decided not to interview him, was John Mark Carr. You know John Mark Carr as the goof, nutcase, you could call him whatever you want, that claimed responsibility for the death of JonBenet Ramsey. Well, John Mark Carr is back at it again, and in fact, I want to start with my my guests this evening. We have investigative journalist and Entertainment Tonight correspondent Diane Diamond. We have NBC News analyst and former felony DA Robin Sachs, private investigator Logan Clark, and Samantha Spiegel here to talk about John Mark Carr. Let's start with Diane Diamond. I'm going to throw you the ball, and you run with it.
Well, you know, Dana, I was stunned to learn recently that John Mark Carr, you call him a goof, I call him a wackadoodle, was out there in the public realm still terrorizing people. Now, what do I mean by that? I don't mean that he's confessing to murder again, as he did with JonBenet Ramsey, and of course they decided pretty quickly that he was full of you-know-what, but right. He has taken to the Internet. And he has a group of minions around, people that he has met along the way of his life's path, that he has sort of recruited Manson-like into his web of weirdness. And some of them are young people, and some of them are impressionable young people, like Samantha, who so has her head on straight. I had a long conversation with her today. She sounds so great and strong and focused. But what he does is he recruits them to his way of thinking, almost like he needs an audience. And then when they don't respond the way he wants, he's threatening to kill them,
yeah.
As he did with Samantha, as I think others will tell you, he has done with other minors, other young people. Some of his minions, I understand, are not minors or young people. They are fellow wackadoodles in life who become so engaged with this man on the Internet that they will do virtually anything for him. They will research for him. They will send him money. They would, as one person told me, I would have killed for him.
Wow.
So I don't know why in the world, maybe Robin Sachs can answer this, why in the world this man who still in his emails brags about, I'm sorry, bear with me, quote, tasting six-year-old young sex, and missing it so much, and talks about killing young little girls all over the world, why is he still roaming around the countryside? I just don't understand why he's not locked up.
Robin Sachs, what's going on here?
Oh, goodness. I mean, that is the question that all of us that all of us sitting here,
yeah.
You know, Logan, it's just me. Am I missing something? Why is this person not in jail? And, you know, I'm reading tons of information, including his own manuscripts and his own words that have not been released to very many people, and hear and see that this is someone who is an active pedophile, someone who is actively engaged in criminal threats, at least from his own writing, and goes beyond wackadoodle and nutball. I mean, this is crazy, crazy. This is crazy dangerous. This isn't crazy, you know, playing the system, although that's what he has successfully crafted in the court of public opinion, is that, you know, you hear the name John Mark Carr, and people automatically say, oh, that's that nutbag that confessed the murder. Oh, yeah, well, whatever, he's just a nut, and people move on. No, this is a dangerous individual who is actively recruiting and actively emulates and seeks to be, and frankly is very similar to the likes of Charles Manson.
Absolutely, and we've talked about these kind of characters, these cult leaders, if you want to use that term, before. Logan Clark, private investigator, what's going on with John Mark Carr? What's your involvement?
Well, I'm specifically trying to find it, but of course I'd like to get him, you know, in a room for about a week. But
yeah.
My job is to find him.
Yeah.
He's the guy is very, very, very smart. I mean, he
yeah.
is challenging everyone. This guy's a profiler's dream. As far as challenge, he brags about everything, but they obviously haven't been able to pin anything on him. But I'm trying to dig into the what are the facts and what are the reasons why he wasn't. I mean, they actually had him under arrest, and there is a detective who wrote an investigation paper on what was Carr's computer. And it was unbelievable. There's all kinds of child porn. There is no question it was there. This is a police detective describing this in great detail. And somewhere it's in the information so far is not there, but all of a sudden it just got dropped.
Yeah.
It nothing ever happened with it. I mean, they had the computer, they had the photographs, it's in the report, it was known, they had the guy in jail. Somewhere, what happened between that spot? Well, that's not something you're going to read in a report necessarily. So I just got to keep digging and find out where did the ball drop through that slot, and then point it out and bring it back up through that hole that it slipped through, and go, hello, there's a crime here. Establish there's a crime there.
Yep.
Beyond this, you know, reasonable doubt, but just, you know, a crime enough to arrest this guy and try him.
Get him off the street.
Bail, slap him with a bail. The guy say a judge, an ex-sheriff's captain, and a municipal court judge, O.M. Gray, stated on this guy, he said, given Carr's erroneous, repulsive fantasy sexual disclosures about JonBenet and then having him thrust back into society after his arrest in Thailand has only served to inflict numerous inexperienced and innocent private citizens, including his immediate family, in dealing with Carr's psychosis, whatever that may be. I view Carr's recent communications as a serious, imminent threat, and I have a grave concern for those Carr may be targeting anywhere he may reside to or travel to in the U.S. or abroad. That's a U.S. judge.
When did he say that, Logan? May I ask? It's Diane asking.
Yeah, this was, I believe, 2006. This was all around 2000.
And look at this, Dana. 4 years later, he's still out giving people like Samantha, who is on with us now, these very explicit death threats if she doesn't do or act or say in the way that he wants them to.
Right. He's already a stalker.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question. I mean, I've chased stalkers for I've been doing this for 35 years. He's already a stalker. There is no question. He should be arrested immediately on stalking. Yeah. If I was with Samantha and he was around anywhere, I could arrest him instantly.
You know,
I mean, he has committed crimes that there is no question.
Yep.
Why aren't the authorities doing something? Well, even if the ball slipped through the crack, I can see that. You know, some guy languishes in jail someplace, and it was a traffic ticket, and he's been there for 3 months or something, those terrible stories. He slipped through the cracks because he's one of 500 or 1,100 guys there. This freak, this pedophile, who's now a woman, isn't easy. I mean, he's noticeable. He's out there. He's doing this. If this guy slips through the cracks, everybody should be, everyone should know it. They should go, my God, where did we screw up?
I mean, Logan's got it so right. I mean, it's shame on everybody for letting his manipulation. I mean, here we talk about all the time the case of the Dugard and the John Gardner and all these people where the system failed. I mean, this is, again, another person who is on the map of law enforcement, on the map of judges,
on the map of the world.
Worldwide, and yet here is someone who is out there, and he is laughing. I mean, he is laughing because he is outsmarting and using his skilled manipulation to continuously get away with his crime.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about John Mark Carr. NBC News analyst Robin Sachs is here. Diane Diamond from Entertainment Tonight, private investigator Logan Clark, and Samantha Spiegel. Hi, Samantha.
Hi.
If you're near a mirror, look at it, look at yourself, and be very proud of yourself about coming forward in something like this, because it takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of courage. Tell me about John Mark Carr. When did you first meet him?
Well, I first met him as a teacher's assistant at the school that I went to. I was in fourth grade, and he was a teacher's assistant for the third grade class. And then years went on, and 2006 came, and I remembered him, of course, and I wanted to reconnect with him, and it took me 2 years to figure out a way to do that. And so 2008, we reconnected primarily through email, and he had a website at the time, and that's how it all started.
Why did you want to reconnect with him?
Because I had fond memories of him as a teacher's assistant, and I don't know how to explain it other than I had this lingering awe with him.
Mm-hmm.
I was always sort of amazed by him, captivated. I don't know why when I look back, but I wanted
just,
to be around him. I wanted to be involved with him.
Go ahead,
Robin. I'm just going to interject. This is not unlike the effect that he's had on other people, other people who have not been brave enough to yet come forward, like Samantha. But they're, you know, he is a skilled manipulator.
All cult figures are. They're experts at it. I've chased them all my life.
Yep. And whether it's David Koresh or Jim Jones or whoever, and especially with the internet today, the personalities like this, and John Mark Carr now calls himself Alexis Riche Carr, or Alexis Riche, and was last...
Alexis Reich, as in the
Reich.
Third Reich.
Or Reich.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Third Reich.
Oh, my God. Diane...
And also, what's interesting about this guy is when he was 19, this guy has been a growing up disaster.
Yeah.
When he was 19, he married a 13-year-old girl. They got divorced. When he was 24, he married a 16-year-old girl who was pregnant with twin daughters at the time of the marriage, and both daughters died at birth. But, I mean, this guy always married really young. I mean, back to the time when he was 19, he married a 13-year-old.
And even his parents, just to throw out, I mean, his you know, elderly grandfather has, you know, is disassociated with him, and his, you know, he has children who are alive who have to, you know, deal with this individual as being their relative and being someone to contend with.
Well, I want to make it very clear to John Mark Carr or Alexis Reich. When I spoke to her a couple years ago, or him, whatever they are now, they told me they were an expert on the internet. So he'll Google his name, or she'll Google his name, and they'll see the show. And Alexis or John, feel free to call me. You know how to get a hold of me. You kept my number, you said. And or email me. I would love to talk to you. Let's go back to Samantha. Samantha, when you started corresponding with Alexis or John or whoever, and you saw, obviously, a change in this individual. It wasn't the teacher that you once admired. What went on from there? What kind of correspondence were you having?
It immediately turned into an almost incestuous sort of relationship. Our correspondence was obsessive and very controlling. And the relationship that went with it was fatherly, friendly, and almost like a lover as well. And that took off rather quickly.
Classic pedophile, Robin?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, every telltale sign is right there. The one thing that a classic pedophile will do, they will spend an exorbitant amount of time, take an exorbitant amount of interest in their prey, and spend time learning their isms, their tics, their whatever it takes, the things that make them, you know, go and stop and everything else in between. And he clearly did that, you know, at length, and knew how to then use the information that he got to try to blackmail, threaten, and stalk Samantha.
Diane Diamond, when you covered John Mark Carr with the Ramsey situation like everyone else, and I can remember doing several shows on him and talking to profilers, etc., and how we criticized the media about giving this creep 2 seconds of his time because he fed off that. He loved the being fed champagne and shrimp, I remember, on the airplane back from Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into that a little bit and how that feeds.
You know, I don't think that John Mark Carr is a stupid man.
No.
I don't think he's brilliant either, but I think that he is smart enough to act crazy when crazy helps him work this system.
Crazy like a fox,
and I would not be surprised, Dana, if he isn't tuned into this program right now, salivating over every word we say, and every time we say his name, he's getting some sort of sexual rise out of it, and that's a shame.
Yep.
But the fact is, you're right, the media was criticized for giving so much attention to this man. After all, he was extradited to the United States, taken into Colorado for one of the most heinous and headline...
Hang on a second.
Oh.
I don't know where that is. Okay.
Hang on a second.
You know, it was right that the media spent a lot of time zeroing in on him, but we were roundly criticized for doing so. And that was a shame, because you know what? We should have kept our headlights on this pervert.
Absolutely.
And I will tell you, I use that word carefully. I've written books about sexual predators, and I know their profile, I know their mindset, and this is a sick human being. If he never touched a young girl, and he hasn't really tasted the sex of six-year-olds and really left them dead all across the globe, as he has written to Samantha and others, yes, John Mark Carr, we've read your emails, then he is sick enough to brag that he did it.
Yeah.
And that is sick enough to get him out of normal society, in my view.
Absolutely.
Give Diane Diamond her bar card, the police badge, because she's got it dead on.
She does. Listen, guys.
Robin,
we
thank you. I did it all without going to law school, too.
I love it.
Robin, we...
Really, I think he is a danger to society, and the worst thing the media did was not to pay attention of him, where he went, how he was communicating with people, and how he was terrorizing young people like Samantha. I've had long talks with Samantha. I know her attorney, Robin Sachs, probably has too. And what he did, the mind games he played with her, and the out-and-out death threats he gave to her should have him in jail right now. The problem is, as Logan will tell you, they can't locate him.
Yeah.
Well, Robin Sachs, I hope you call me, because I can tell you how to help locate him and put this sicko in prison.
Absolutely. In effect.
And that's what Logan is heading up with us to, and we are taking all of the tips that we possibly can get. You can email them to me on my website, robin@robinsachs.com, a little plug for that. And also, more importantly, we want the message to be out there to other victims to know that there are support in numbers.
Oh, and you know they've got to be out there too, Robin.
And there are. I know that there are. I've spoken with at least two others who are terrified, and we are here for you. We are here to support you. There is great strength in numbers, and there is possibly justice in numbers. And there are other cases that are actually open right now that are investigating. Other law enforcement agencies that are investigating him. And we want to reach those people as well to know that there is help and resources for those people.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, Logan Clark is...
I just married Logan?
You did, because we just lost him, actually, if you heard a dial tone. And I'm hoping, Robin, maybe you can email him and have him call into the conference, because I lost him on my end. Private Investigator Logan Clark was here. Hopefully we can get him back. Attorney Robin Sachs, ET correspondent, crime reporter Diane Diamond, and Samantha Spiegel. Samantha, I want to go back to you again. Talking to Carr, all of a sudden he becomes starts to stalk you via the internet, makes threats to you, according to one CBS news story, that he knows where you live, etc. Did you call the authorities right away, and did you respond to him at all when he made these threats?
when he made these threats, at the time I was too afraid not to talk to him for fear that he would pick up on something, that I was talking to law enforcement or the FBI. So I continued to talk I made sure not to upset him because I didn't want to make the situation worse. And so I did contact law enforcement. The FBI really haven't done much at all to help, but I have a lot of other people behind me, like this little army of people that have been fabulous and have been hiring PIs or, you know, just law enforcement. So, I did do that immediately.
When's the last time you...
restraining order immediately, too.
When's the last time you heard from him?
The last time I heard from him was, I believe, on the 18th.
Of April?
Of
April, okay. And at that time, according to the story that I'm looking at here, that he may have been in a battered women's shelter in Seattle.
A battered women's shelter, but a women's homeless shelter.
Oh, a women's homeless shelter in Seattle. And he told you that? That's where he was?
No, he never told me where he was. Mm-hmm. But there were ways to figure out where he was. And I believe one of the women's homeless shelters made a sighting of him and let people know that, and something happened with that. But he was seen at one of the ones in Seattle.
You know, Dana, if I could just jump in here.
Sure.
Let's remind listeners, if they don't know this, John Mark Carr was overseas at the time he was extradited on the JonBenet Ramsey confession because he, among other things, besides trolling for young kids, I believe, was trying to get a sex change.
Right.
And now Samantha and other people, it's been reported in places like the National Enquirer, have learned that he says he has undergone a sex change, thus the name Alexis.
Yeah.
There are some pictures of him from Facebook that make him look like a her, but I'm not sure that this sex change has really happened because as far as I can investigate, John Mark Carr doesn't have a job.
No.
He has no money for a sex change operation. Does he let his hair grow, put a little mascara and lipstick on, take a picture for Facebook? Yes.
Yeah.
Has he actually had a sex change? Well, one of my sources told me, again, I apologize for the graphicness of the language, but he's really a chick with a stick, meaning he's a cross-dresser.
Right, yeah.
So I think that that's how he may have talked his way into this homeless shelter, a women's homeless shelter, if indeed he's there. That's the last known sighting of him so far.
Again, I want to put out a message to John Mark Carr or Alexis. You told me that you were an expert on the Internet, so Mr. Expert, feel free to get a hold of me. In fact, I would love to hear from you. Robin Sachs, when you see this case, you have a very brave young girl, Samantha, that has been terrorized by a freak. We have an order of protection, a restraining order, whatever you want to call it. There's a much bigger picture here when you look at the accessibility to the Internet for a guy like John Mark Carr. How many Samanthas does John Mark Carr know is makes me wonder. Robin?
I missed, for whatever reason, you broke up in your last part of the question in terms of being the expert on the Internet, but I think, and you said there's a bigger picture here, and there is a bigger picture here right now, but my number one concern is Samantha.
Right. Right?
I mean, there is a huge picture, and there's a lot of missteps, and as Logan has mentioned, I mean, and the question that we're all asking as a member of society, as a mother, as a victim's advocate, as someone who seeks justice, yes, I want this case investigated, and I want the criminal justice system to do their part. But really, that's secondary to me right now. Right now, I want all of the legal remedies that are available to Samantha to be exercised. And that first one is to ensure that he has a valid, effective restraining order. I mean, he's, you know, as we've kind of discussed here, he's, you know, very skilled at knowing what's going on. We have resources that suggest that he actually has checked your website probably in the upwards of 70 or 80 times today. So I do believe he knows about the restraining order. I do believe that he knows about Samantha, going to law enforcement, but I want to make sure that we exercise every right that Samantha has to her to at least get some protection for her, although we all know that restraining orders are documents, but it's the first, then hopefully, in many restraining orders for all of the other people that we know about, so that they can follow suit. And with all of that ammunition, then law enforcement is perfectly poised to do what needs to be done.
Absolutely.
But Robin, don't you have to find him first to serve him, or is there some other way that you can alert him to the fact that he's that you're on to him?
Well, I don't want to give up my legal strategies. Serving him is, you know, under the law, there's a requirement that for when there's a restraining order for the person to have a right to notice in a hearing. And there's some latitude of what the ability is. I mean, there was a restraining order that was granted in this case without him being present. That restraining order, there was supposed to be a return date of May 5th. It's now been extended to May 17th. The court recognizes the danger. And, you know, certainly having him served would be the easiest way to deal with everything, but there are other ways for things to be done, and we plan on utilizing all of them.
I think Logan is...
Somebody like this, you can't really do it without them knowing it, because the public is your best source of getting stuff out there. More people have gotten caught by publicity and things coming out, radio shows like this, television shows constantly showing things, and you see it all the time. Leads to a lead, and they can bring somebody in. And so the camera can be our best friend in a case like this.
Absolutely.
It's so dangerous.
If he's checked this website of this Dana Presser radio show 70, 80 times today, he's listening. He knows that he is on thin ice, and it's only a matter of time, because if any prosecutor, former prosecutor, can get him, it's Robin Sachs. Yep. I've watched you in action, man.
You're scaring me.
Yeah, no, you should be scaring him.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And I'm on a mission, and I plan on bringing, you know, and we so appreciate, Dana, that you utilizing and letting us utilize your voice that reaches so many activists out there to assist in this process. And really, the secondary mission is to clear up the myths that John Mark Carr is simply a nut, but that he is a wackadoodle, as Diane has aptly pointed out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a dangerous wackadoodle, I'm afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. Samantha, I have another question, Samantha, if I could. And as difficult as it was when you said that you wanted to continue corresponding with him, he made some threats, and you responded. And when did the contact between the two of you stop, so to speak? Did he initiate the stop, or did you?
I initiated it because we had been talking on the phone and through email, and I dumped him. And finally, I think knowing that I had confidence that I had a restraining order to helped, and so it stopped on my part. And then he continued to contact me afterwards. And I knew that just I didn't want to go there, nor could I, if I wanted to keep the restraining order.
Yeah.
Tell Dana what some of the emails said to you when you defied him, quote unquote.
Well, he did talk about with more threats. He would tell me that he would essentially laugh as he watched me die. He just wants me to be miserable. Is the bottom of it, and he's extremely pissed that I've defied his demands for me. He's extremely upset about that. I'm supposed to be compliant with him, obedient, and I didn't do that. So he definitely let that show in those emails.
Logan, let's put the... like my late father used to say, let's put where the bear shit in the buck brush here. This guy is a freak. This guy's a freak. And Mr. Carr or Alexis Wright or whatever your name is, like I say, contact me. You told me before that you would contact me, so I'd love to sit down and have a chat with you. Logan, how do we catch this guy?
Really as fast as it needs to be done, you need eyes. We need to... we need to do show more of these shows. We need to get everybody looking for this guy. And they will see him. You can't put enough people. And the police cannot command people. They cannot assign people to go looking for him because there is no case. So they literally, I mean, there's no, they can't put out an APB.
Right.
They can put out a look, yep, be aware, you know, type thing. If they happen to see this freak running down the street with a dress, and if he's in San Francisco, you know, half the other people are running on the street. But we need to get this out. We need his picture.
Yeah.
We need this, you know, him as a girl picture on television.
Yeah.
We need his picture everywhere. And when they do that, people are going to see him somewhere. This guy's got to go somewhere, whether it's a homeless shelter,
yeah,
no matter where it is, he's got to go. And he's got to feed this urge that he has to be around children. He must feed it. He feeds it by these emails. He feeds, email me. I'd love him to email me if you think he's so smart.
I'd love
hey,
to,
I'm easy to find on the internet, too.
Yeah.
Internet,
yeah.
IamDiamond.com. Just email me.
Exactly.
Yep.
I intend to write my next syndicated column, Dana. You know, I do one once a week,
yep,
on this very topic, and it goes to newspapers across the country. I hope they run John Mark Carr's picture. Everybody remembers what he looks like, but let's remind everybody and really get a nationwide manhunt going here.
Yep.
No, and, you know, when I put it on my detective listserv, which thousands upon thousands, probably literally 10,000 to 15,000 detectives all over the world, and it's only for detectives. And when it went on, the first thing they said, I mean, I got dozens of emails back. This guy is not in jail?
Yeah.
No, isn't it?
They said,
yeah,
what, this guy, everybody, no one even knows he's running around, guys.
If you please send my next column to your detective's list, or better yet, give me your detective's list. No, I mean,
yeah,
I really believe that's what's going to happen. It was like the very vigilant police in Times Square recently with the car bomb. They knew exactly what to do. They knew exactly how to react. They are trained for this, and I'm going to tell you, it's going to be some off-duty or on-duty cop who's going to see John Mark Carr in a homeless shelter on the street, looking like a man, looking like a woman, who's going to say, like Elizabeth Smart, hey, there she is.
And it may be some 14-year-old kid that says, hey, mommy.
Mm-hmm.
That's that weird guy that they've been showing on television. That's that. You know how we caught a guy one time who ran off with a 13-year-old because we knew that he was addicted to Starbucks. He couldn't go. He couldn't go literally 3 hours without a Starbucks, and he was running across country with a 14-year-old. And Starbucks, I called the president of Starbucks in Seattle. They worked with us. And we pinpointed the areas, so they didn't have to do it everywhere. We pinpointed the areas, and I said, put the wanted poster not in the store, inside the kitchen,
behind the counter,
so that the employees will see it. And I guarantee you, somebody's going to call from a Starbucks. And this guy used a computer from a Starbucks. Whenever he went, he used Wi-Fi. Anyway, that's how we caught him.
Yep.
Yep.
There are people are creatures of habit. This guy must feed the sickness that he has. He feeds it partially by sending these emails. He feeds it by being around, looking at girls, seeing girls. He might have a good control of it in a sense because he's smart enough to know, you know, to talk about it and not get caught.
Yep.
So he could be, but he still has to feed it. He's got to be able to watch him.
I was so taken when I first began to speak with Samantha about how she described how John Mark Carr relates to children. Do you remember what you said, Samantha? He was almost magical.
Yeah, he was very charismatic, very, very magical. I always thought there was something, you know, back in ninth, or not ninth grade, when I was nine. I didn't think too much of it, but there was a little bit of me that thought it was a little peculiar that he got more attention and a different kind of attention than other teachers. It just, you know, but that it only goes so far. I didn't know much when I was nine, but he did get a different kind of attention, and it's I don't think it's an appropriate type of attention. It crosses boundaries. It's potentially potentially wrong. It just nobody.
He's the Pied Piper.
The Pied Piper, I guess.
Yep.
Huh?
He's a Pied Piper, but he's not playing a flute. He's playing a snake, he is a dangerous individual.
The kids will follow him.
Yep.
The kids will follow him because he can be like the chocolate factory. He can do that. He can be this weird, odd. Kids are attracted to weird, odd people because they're kind of like them as far as being different.
Exactly right. Kids are awkward. They're going through time, and that's exactly right. You know, you can relate.
Especially when you're 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. I'm sure Samantha would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, teenage, too. I mean, that's really where you're going to identify questioning yourself.
Set. Yeah. Exactly. That's a whole different set, and it takes a complete different mindset to molest a teenager than it does to a 9, a 10, or 11-year-old.
And let's not forget what this man's vocation is. His vocation is a teacher.
Yeah.
Or a nanny.
Yep. That's scary.
He could be a caretaker to children. So, you know, if he ever gets out of the home or shelter for women, he probably is already out, long gone from there. He is probably seeking employment in this country or perhaps another country, because I don't think has his passport been flagged?
I believe it's been flagged, but whether or not they're concentrating on it now or not, I doubt it. If we got enough publicity, it would be flagged because the department would flag it just by seeing it. The minute we're on CNN or something, they would go,
and
someone would pick the phone.
And he seeks nannying jobs. You know, he seeks to be a nanny, a caretaker, a teacher,
a teacher's aide.
And he'll be
somewhere where he can see kids playing in a playground. I'll put Vegas odds on it.
Yep.
He'll be watching children where they go on the barbells and their little skirts and they play and... He'll be watching kids somewhere playing. He'll be watching them. He will not be able to be away from that for, I would bet, a 24-hour period. There will be somewhere where he can go and see that. Of course, with the internet now, you can get a lot of that urge out through the internet.
Yep.
Right.
But this guy seems to crave the attention so much.
Well, he wants to.
No, he,
yeah, he wants to crave attention. Feel free, John. Email me. You know my email, Dana@scaredmonkeys.com. Do it right now, buddy. I'll put you on the air too, because I'd love to see a picture of you in a wig too, John. Send it to me. In fact, we'll even post it on the website. You can get your jollies by seeing it there. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Robin, we're going to end up here pretty quick, too, and I want to give Samantha the last word. But Robin Sachs, you're representing Samantha. When John Mark Carr first started getting lots of publicity with JonBenet Ramsey, I started criticizing some of the media for giving it to him. Right now, I'm going to flip-flop, and I'm going to say this guy needs to have his mug all over everything so he can get off the street and we can save a life or two. Your client Samantha, by coming forward, has saved some lives, I believe, and she should be credited for that because she's a very brave young girl.
Absolutely. Samantha inspires me to do whatever I can do to help her, and she's inspired all of us. I mean, all of us look at this and to think that a 19-year-old young woman who has the strength and courage that many, many people don't, and certainly many of John, Mark Carr's, Alexis's, other victims have not even had within themselves, it goes to say a lot. And I'm constantly impressed with her. Not only she's diligent, she's made effort, she's involved, and she has no axe to grind. She just wants to be safe and to keep other people safe and get the word out about him.
Samantha, you, again, should be very proud of yourself. You've come forward to do something that's very difficult. Give yourself a big pat on the back. But if you had a couple of words, I'll give you 30 seconds, to those that are out there, those young girls, those impressionable people who maybe have someone email them or Facebook them or MSN them, and they want to have some attention, or they like the attention they're getting, but their suspicions are maybe a little bit strange. I want you to talk about that a little bit. If you had some advice for a young girl or a young man out there that's having some...
Dealing with somebody like John?
Right.
What I'd say immediately, get out of it. There are so many better things that you can give to yourself than a relationship like that. It's so damaging. I feel like damaged goods myself. I have, I think a lot of problems have arisen from my relationship with him. And nobody needs to bring that upon themselves at all. It's unnecessary. It's detrimental. So get out of it. And contact any of these people, because everybody's willing to help, and there's safety numbers and support numbers. Yeah.
For sure.
Good for you. I'm constantly amazed by Samantha.
Yep, for sure. Robin Sachs, Diane Diamond, Logan Clark, and especially Samantha, thank you. And we'll follow up more on this story.
Dana, if you're with Don Marcar, you better call me.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I know he listens, and like you say, if he's been on the website 80 times, he knows how to get a hold of me. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Dana.
Bye-bye. You know, if there was ever a show in all my years of doing this show that I want you to listen to, here we have a chance to get someone off the street that is so dangerous. And Mr. Carr or Alexis Reich, if you're listening, you are dangerous. You are a problem. And you need to be taken off the street, and you should be in jail. You don't agree with me? Email me. Call me. Do whatever you have to do, because this needs to stop. Anyway, thank you to all my guests this evening. Of course, the show will be available on podcast. The podcast may be slightly delayed with all the flooding that's been going on and the bad weather that's been going on. But hopefully the show will be available for podcast as soon as possible. I encourage you to check out the webpage at www.scaredmonkeys.com or the radio page, which is Scared Monkeys Radio. .com. There you can pick up shows live, past shows, daily commentaries, and the new Twitter page for Scared Monkeys, twitter.com/scaredmonkeys, and of course Scared Monkeys is also on Facebook. We are all over the place, and we certainly appreciate you being here. For all of you listening on the internet, on the radio, and watching on Access Channel 7 television, I'm Dana Pretzer signing off, and we'll see you again real soon here on The Dana Pretzer Show.
You've been listening to The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.